and didn't move. "Now, dear, it's not so bad. You must simply run home and take a bath and change. You'll be back in time for math class. Rachel, that was incredibly clumsy. Sport, run to the bathroom and get some paper towels. We'll have to wipe all this up. Pinky, run with him. Bring the whole roll. My heavens, this is a mess, isn't it?" There was a great deal of fuss. The interesting thing was how Rachel, Laura, Pinky, Janie, Marion, all of them cooed over Harriet when Miss Elson was watching. They helped her out of the seat, saying nice things the whole time. Then, when Miss Elson went to the door to grab the paper roll from Pinky, Marion poured the rest of the ink down Harriet's back. At this, Harriet turned and hit Marion across the face, making Marion's face entirely blue. "Now, now, Harriet, we mustn't blame others for our own trouble. That's no way to behave. Rachel couldn't help it, and Marion had nothing to do with it. It simply was an accident, and I'm sure Rachel feels terrible about it." "Oh, yes, Miss Elson, I do," Rachel piped up hurriedly. "That's right. Now you see, Harriet, when people hurt us, they are sorry afterward, and we have to forgive them quickly so they will feel better," Miss Elson huffed and puffed. Rachel was laughing so hard behind Miss Elson's back that she was almost caught when Miss Elson turned to extend her blue arm to pull Rachel toward Harriet. "No, Rachel must know that she couldn't help what she did, and you must know that too, Harriet." Harriet shot two steely eyes in Rachel's direction. Rachel smiled like an angel. "I'm terribly sorry, Harriet. I must have tripped. I really am sorry." Her eyes were shining so much that Harriet knew she was 1 minute from falling on the floor in helpless laughter. Harriet threw her a contemptuous glance and looked down at her blue legs. Pinky and Sport were scrubbing away, one on each leg, as Miss Elson tried to squeeze some of the ink out of the dress into a small cup. Suddenly, Harriet couldn't stand it anymore. She grabbed her notebook and wrenched herself away from them all, flinging ink all over everyone as she did. She catapulted herself out of the door. She could hear their little flurries and shouts dimly behind her as she ran down the big steps, her feet making slush, slush noises in her ink-filled shoes. The school porter put out his arms to stop her as she went by and got a blob of ink in his eye for his trouble. She ran even faster out on the street because everyone stared at her. "I'm the blue monster of East End Avenue," she thought, as she careened across 86th Street and up the block to her house. She was still leaving tracks as she entered her house, so she knew there would be spots on the rug, but she didn't care. The important thing was to get upstairs before anyone saw her. Her room reached at last. She fled into the bathroom and locked the door. There she began frantically to peel off all her clothes, while the tears, finally come, welled forth as hot as tiny knives down her cheeks. She began to run the bathwater, almost unable to see the taps. There was a knock on the door, and the cook's voice came through.
"What's the matter? What you doing home? You taking a bath in there?"
"Yes," Harriet managed to say, composing herself.
"What you doin' taking a bath when you supposed to be in school? Your mama's not here. I'm all alone here. What am I supposed to do about you?"
"They sent me home to take a bath. It's all right. Go away."
"Who you saying go away to? Don't you tell me to go away. I don't see what's all right about it. I never heard of any child coming home middle of the day to take a bath."
"Well, now you've heard it. The teacher sent me home."
There was a thick silence.
"Humph!"
came through the door. She could almost hear the cook thinking. Finally, "You not hurt, are you?" Harriet sighed. "No, I'm not hurt."
There was another silence. Then Harriet said, "Can I have my lunch here?"
"You already took one tomato sandwich this morning."
"I forgot it."
"The work in this house is too much. Take your bath and come downstairs. I'll make another sandwich."
"Tomato!" Harriet shouted. "I know, tomato, tomato. I'll be glad if I never see another tomato."
And she shuffled away. Harriet sighed with relief. She put one toe in the water, immediately staining the whole tub blue. Then she lowered herself by stages into the hot tub, there to cry softly for a long time before she could bathe. The next afternoon, after school, Harriet went stealthily over the fences again to watch. There had been no more incidents in school that day, except for the fact that no one would sit with her at lunch again, and no one spoke to her. She was getting used to it in a way, but then she thought there wasn't much else she could do. As she peeked through the Hennessy's fence, she could see that they had done quite a bit after the cake the other day. The whole structure of a little house was up, except for a little to be done around the door. Beth Ellen was still working on the sign. Sport was organizing everyone to look through the remaining lumber for two nice pieces to form the sides of the door. Rachel suddenly spoke up.
"My mother got a note in the mailbox yesterday. She said it was from some crank, but I saw it, and I think it's from that spy."
"What did it say?"
Carrie asked. Rachel spoke importantly.
"Oh, it was just ridiculous. Said nobody liked me. They only liked the cake."
There was a small silence. Pinky, who was hammering, said thoughtfully, "Well, it's very good cake." Harriet laughed to herself. Pinky always said something dumb. Janie said, "Oh, Pinky." Marion said,
"I bet it was from her, because that's what she said about Rachel in that book of hers."
Rachel hurried on as though she hadn't heard anything.
"It said a lot of things about us making a nuisance and so forth, but really it sounded just like her. I'm sure it was her."
Beth Ellen got up suddenly and squeaked,
"I'm finished. I'm finished."
They all hurried over and exclaimed a long time about how beautiful the sign was, what a good job Beth Ellen had done, and all that sort of thing. Beth Ellen stood and grinned wildly as though she'd just done the Sistine Chapel. "I bet you," Harriet thought, "that's the first time anybody ever said anything nice to her." Pinky said, "Is it dry?"
"Almost," said Beth Ellen.
Sport leaned down and said,
"If I pick it up by the edges, I think I can hang it up. It just needs to be nailed in over the door."
He picked it up and carried it across the yard. As he was changing it from hand to put it in position, the face of it was turned toward Harriet, and she saw with amazement that it read, "The Spy Catcher Club." The lettering was very bad, but then what else would Beth Ellen do? Harriet sat down with a plump on the damp ground. So it was she, Harriet, that they were talking about. She was her. How odd, she thought, to think of yourself as her. She took out her notebook and wrote, "They have a club, and I am not in it. It is also a club against me. They are really out to get me. I have never had to go through something like this. I will have to be very brave. I will never give up this notebook, but it is clear that they are going to be as mean as they can until I do. They just don't know Harriet M. Welsh." Harriet got up, walked solidly to the fence, and climbed noisily over. She didn't even care if they heard her now. She knew what she had to do, and she was going to do it. Chapter 12. The next morning she arrived very early at school and was writing furiously in the notebook when they all filed in. They had been chattering excitedly among themselves, but they all stopped when they saw her. She continued to write with renewed zeal until Miss Elson came in. She stood up with the others, but then sat down and wrote some more. When Miss Elson handed back the test papers from the day before, she didn't even look up, but just continued writing. Every now and then she would glance meaningfully at one of the others to let them know that at that very moment she was writing about that person. They all watched her nervously. Actually, she was doing nothing of the kind. She had begun to write a series of memories, starting with the first thing she could remember at all, which was standing up in her crib, looking out the window at the park, and shouting with every ounce of breath in her body. She was writing a later memory. I remember when we lived at 77th and 5th. I had to ride the school bus every day instead of walking. There was a very nasty boy who lived in the next apartment. I was 7 and he was 3. His name was Carter Wingfield, and he burped all the time. He was so nasty looking that I pinched him once when his mother wasn't looking. My mother didn't know it was me that pinched him, but old Golly knew, and she let me have it good for that. She said even if he was the nastiest thing I ever saw in my life, I should just think about that to myself and not do anything to him because he couldn't help his nastiness. She looked around the room. Apprehensive glances came her way now and then. Otherwise, nothing was happening. She wrote, "Can they help what they're doing? I wish I knew what old Golly would think of this. I have to know what she thinks. How can I find out?" I think she would say that they could because they're trying to control me and make me give up this notebook, and she always said that people who try to control people and change people's habits are the ones that make all the trouble. If you don't like somebody, walk away, she said, but don't try and make them like you. I think she would hate this whole thing. She looked up and saw everyone starting his work. She took out a piece of paper, feeling listless and bored as she did. She started to write her name at the top of the page, but it didn't seem like any fun. She looked around at everyone. Most people weren't looking at her, but the ones who were, Marion and Rachel in particular, had nasty looks on their faces. She looked back at the paper, gave up trying to take an interest in her own name, and went back to writing in her notebook. Miss Elson's harsh voice finally reached her. "Harriet, you're not paying attention!" Harriet looked up and saw everyone looking at her with contempt. "They're thinking just what you'd expect of her," she thought to herself. She put the notebook under her desk, on her knees, where Miss Elson couldn't see it. Whenever Miss Elson turned to the blackboard, Harriet looked under and wrote a little. "That pinky white head is the most disgusting thing I ever saw. What must his mother have thought the first time she looked at him? She must have thrown up." During math class, she wrote all the time. Everyone was bent over their work, and Miss Harris, the math teacher, was too old to get up and walk around and look. Harriet got so involved, she didn't even think where she was. She didn't, in fact, even hear the bell. From far away, she heard someone saying, "Harriet! Oh, Harriet!" And then, "Harriet Welsh!" suddenly, very loudly. She almost fell off the chair. She looked up and the room was empty except for old Miss Harris, who was looking at her with the meanest look she had ever seen on a teacher. Harriet stared back at her, terrified. Miss Harris stood up.
"It's time to go home, Harriet, but before you go, I think you had better show me what has kept you so entranced during math class."
She advanced slowly toward Harriet. Harriet could see her bony, claw-like hand covered with brown spots reaching, reaching. Harriet got up so fast she knocked her chair over. She caught sight of Miss Harris reeling backward away from her as she made such a great leap for the door she might have been pole-vaulting. Miss Harris gasped, and her hand flew to her throat, but Harriet was out and gone, hugging her notebook, running for her life. The next day was even worse. She didn't even make any pretense of doing her work. She just wrote all the time. Miss Elson spoke to her 4 times, and Miss Harris yelled 3 times, then gave up. At the end of the day, she went straight home, had her cake and milk, then took her notebook over to the park and sat on a bench. She found that she enjoyed writing under the trees. "I have heard that pigeons make people get cancer, so I will stay away from them. On the other hand, they are pretty. I like to look at the mayor's house. It is a nice white house. Once my daddy told me that there was a lot of houses like that all up and down the river here, but then they made a park and threw away all the houses. They should have left some old haunted ones for children to go and play in. I would have locked Pinky in the basement until his hair turned white. I like the tugboats. I don't have anyone to play with. I don't even have anyone to talk to now they got rid of old Golly. I am going to finish up these memoirs and sell them to the Book of the Month selection. Then my mother will get the book in the mail as a surprise. Then I will be so rich and famous that people will bow in the streets and say, 'There goes Harriet M. Welsh. She is very famous, you know.' Rachel Hennessy will plots." Harriet looked up when she heard the toot-toot of a toy whistle. She raised her eyebrows at what she saw. They were making a parade along the river. The boy with the purple socks, now wearing green socks, walked in front, carrying the flagpole with the purple socks attached. There was a rat-a-tat-tat from a toy drum that Pinky Whitehead was beating, and behind them there was a squadron formed by Rachel Hennessy, Marion Hawthorne, Carrie Andrews, Laura Peters, Beth Ellen, and Sport and Janie. They marched in formation like a platoon, and when they turned, Harriet could see a sign attached to Beth Ellen's back which said, "This parade, the courtesy of the Spy Catcher Club." Harriet sat frozen, watching them march up and down. She was afraid to move because they might see her. Her worst fears were realized a moment later when Marion Hawthorne gave a big blast on the whistle and gestured frantically. 9 heads turned in Harriet's direction. Harriet stiffened. They were going to march right past her. They turned into the lane sedately. Harriet didn't know what to do. She felt that if she showed any reaction at all, it would please them too much. On the other hand, if she showed no reaction at all when a whole parade was marching right under her nose, they would know they had affected her. She sat stiffly on her bench. It was horribly embarrassing. It seemed to take about an hour for them to come toward her, and then they were passing in front of her. As they went past, she felt like General Eisenhower reviewing the troops. It took everything she had not to salute. When they got close, she saw that the boy with the purple socks wore a sign around his neck which said, "Ask to be told the legend of the purple socks. 10 cents. When they were directly opposite her, they all stuck their tongues out in unison as though they had practiced, and Pinky gave an extra little roll to the drum. They marched away. Would they come back around? Harriet opened her notebook. "Well, that's not my fault. I never told him to wear or not wear purple socks. He should have kept on wearing purple socks. Some people act like a martyr at the drop of a hat. Or a sock, ha ha. I hear them coming back. I think I will go home. Harriet walked casually away from the bench. When she saw they were coming around again, she dove under a bush until they marched past. Then she went home, went up to her room, and closed the door. Well, I just won't go to the park anymore. That's nothing. Who wants to go there if it's full of idiots walking around in parades? I can write in my notebook just as well sitting on my bed. I don't care about their dumb old club anyway, if all they're going to do is march around a lot. There was a knock on the door, and when Harriet said, "What?" her mother entered.
"Harriet, I've got to talk to you. I've just come back from your school. Miss Elson called me up this afternoon and said that I had better come over and have a talk about you."
Harriet's throat closed up.
"There's nothing to be afraid of. She just wanted to talk about your schoolwork. She says that for the last week you haven't done any at all. What about it?"
"I haven't anything to say."
"What do you mean? Did you do your work or not?"
"No, I don't think so. I can't remember."
"Harriet, these are very unsatisfactory answers. Is something else bothering you?"
"No."
Harriet's mother pulled the chair over to the bed, sat down, and stared at Harriet.
"What have you got there?"
"What?"
Harriet looked around innocently.
"You know perfectly well what. Is that the same notebook?"
"No, a different one."
"You know what I mean, Harriet. Are you still writing down mean things about people?"
"No, I'm writing my memoirs."
Her mother, for some reason or other, laughed. She then smiled warmly at Harriet.
"Both Miss Elson and Miss Harris say that you do nothing whatever anymore but write in that notebook. Is that right?"
"Yes."
"They say that I must take it away from you or you will never learn anything."
"I'm learning plenty."
"What are you learning?"
"Everything about everybody."
Mrs. Welsh consulted a small slip of paper.
"History, geography, French, science, all bad. You're even doing badly in English, and we know you can't add and subtract."
Harriet just sat there. School seemed a million miles away, a moon that she had been to once.
"I'm afraid that you're only going to be able to play with this notebook after school, but not during school hours."
"I'm not playing. Who says I'm playing? I'm working!"
"Look, dear, at the moment you're in school, so your work is school. Just like your father works at the office, you work at school. School work is your work."
"What do you do?"
"A lot of unseen, unappreciated things. That's not the point. At the moment, your work is going to school and learning, and you're not doing that. Now you can have the notebook as soon as you come home from school. I'll give it to the cook, and you can have it just as soon as you come in."
"No," said Harriet.
"Yes, now that's definite."
"I'll throw a tantrum."
"So throw, but I'm not going to stand here and watch you. Now, in the morning, I don't want to see you leaving here with any notebook, nor are you to arrive at school with one. Miss Elson is going to check."
Harriet lay flat on her stomach on the bed. She pushed her face into the pillow.
"Honey, is something bothering you?"
"No,"
came out very muffled.
Chapter 13. The next morning, Harriet was frisked by her mother. The notebook was taken away and given to the cook, who looked as though she might eat it.
Harriet walked sadly to school. She dragged her feet and looked intently at the cracks in the cement. She dragged in the door, up the steps, and into her homeroom. She sat down and stared at the floor, not hearing anything around her.
After Miss Elson had come in and they had said good morning to her, she went immediately to Harriet, made her stand up to be searched, then searched her desk. Harriet submitted limply. When no notebook was found, Miss Elson patted Harriet on the head like a good puppy and went back to her desk in the front. Some very interested eyes watched this whole procedure. When it was finished, everyone snickered. They whispered a lot and stared at Harriet, who stared at the floor. Harriet did her work. She didn't care anymore about signing her name, and she got no pleasure from the work she did, but she did it. Everything bored her. She found that when she didn't have a notebook, it was hard for her to think. The thoughts came slowly, as though they had to squeeze through a tiny door to get to her, whereas when she wrote, they flowed out faster than she could put them down. She sat very stupidly with a blank mind until finally, "I feel different," came slowly into her head. She sat digesting the thought like a Thanksgiving dinner. "Yes," she thought, after a long pause. And then, after more time, "Mean. I feel mean." She looked around with a mean look for everyone. Nobody saw her. She felt her face contorting. It was an impressive moment that everyone missed. It was a moment that Harriet would never forget. When the bell rang for lunch, it was as though she didn't have to think anymore. Everything happened as though she had planned it, but she really hadn't. For example, when the bell rang, Pinky Whitehead jumped up and ran down the aisle. Harriet put her foot out and he fell flat on his face. A terrific wail went up from his prone body, and when he raised his face, his nose was bleeding. Harriet looked extremely blank. Inside, she felt a sense of very personal satisfaction. She got up and walked quietly out, stepping delicately over Pinky's writhing body. She knew no one would ever think of her because she had never done anything like that in her life. She went and got her tomato sandwich. During lunch, she sat owl-eyed by herself. She felt her thoughts limping like crippled children. When the bell rang again, she rose like a robot and walked to the door. She was pushed helplessly into the crush at the door. Carrie Andrews was right in front of her. Without thought, Harriet pinched her expertly on the leg. Carrie let out a terrible scream and looked around with a wild red flush on her face. Harriet looked solidly ahead. No one would think of her because she had never pinched anyone in her life. Carrie Andrews, as a matter of fact, sometimes pinched, but the only one really known for pinching was Marion Hawthorne. Carrie leaned over and hit Marion in the head, even though Marion was four people away and couldn't possibly have pinched her. A large fight started, and Harriet squeezed her way out and into math class. She sat, looking Miss Harris forlornly in the eye while the others filed in. Miss Harris, after making certain Harriet had no notebook, tried to smile warmly at her, but Harriet looked away. Without a notebook, there was nothing to do but listen to Miss Harris. Having never done this before, Harriet was totally lost. Miss Harris went on and on about some bridge. Everyone copied down a lot of numbers. Harriet copied them down too, but they made absolutely no sense. They went from there into a spirited discussion about buying and selling a lot of lamb chops. Harriet wadded up a piece of paper and again, without thought, sent it flying into Sport's ear. Sport gave a little yelp, but recovered quickly. At his next opportunity, he looked around. Harriet shot him a mean look. He stared at her a minute, his eyes wide with a growing perplexity and fear. Then he looked away quickly.
There was in process an incomprehensible discussion about boats and how many knots they went. Harriet tried to think, but it was impossible. She quite abruptly threw a pencil straight into Beth Ellen's face. Beth Ellen looked horror-struck, and when she saw Harriet looking at her, burst into loud, ridiculous baby tears. The bell rang, and as Miss Harris scuttled over to Beth Ellen, Harriet walked to the door and down the steps. She ran home, into her house, down the steps, and bang, right into the cook. "How can you do it every day? Do they aim you from school right at me?"
"Give me my notebook, please."
"What notebook?"
"What do you mean? My notebook! My notebook!" Harriet had a moment of sheer panic.
"Listen to me. You apologize for almost knocking me to the floor."
The cook stood, hands on hips, as though she had all the time in the world.
"I apologize."
"All right." She turned her back in a grumpy way and stuck her hands back into the dishwater.
"My notebook!" Harriet shouted. "Oh, all right, can't you wait just 1 minute till I get this soap off my hands?"
"No, no, no, I can't wait, I want it now."
"All right."
She washed her hands, dried them, and reached down under the sink. From way back in the back, she pulled out the notebook with a little cleanser spilled on it. Harriet grabbed it and ran out of the room.
"Hey, how about your cake and milk?"
Harriet didn't even hear. She ran into her room and flung herself on the bed. She lay quietly for a minute, looking reverently at her notebook, and then opened it. She had had an unreasonable fear that it would be empty, but there was her handwriting, reassuring if not beautiful. She grabbed the pen and felt the mercy of her thoughts coming quickly, zooming through her head, out the pen, onto the paper. "What a relief," she thought to herself. "For a moment I thought I had dried up." She wrote a lot about what she felt, relishing the joy of her fingers gliding across the page, the sheer relief of communication. After a while, she sat back and began to really think hard. Then she wrote again. "Something is definitely happening to me. I am changing. I don't feel like me at all. I don't ever laugh or think anything funny. I just feel mean all over. I would like to hurt each one of them in a special way that would hurt only them." And then she made a list. Marion Hawthorne, frogs, put one in her desk. A snake would be better. Rachel Hennessy, her father, ask her where he went. Laura Peters, her hair, cut it off, or make a bald spot. Pinky Whitehead, mean looks, that's all he needs. Carrie Andrews, tell her father something terrible about her, which is a lie. Beth Ellen Hansen, hates to be hit. Hit her. Janie, break her little finger. Sport. Call him a sissy and tell everyone he reads cookbooks. Boy with the purple socks. She couldn't think of anything for him because he was so dull. Well, she thought, I will watch him tomorrow. The next day at school, Harriet concentrated on these things. She thought about them so hard she didn't do her work at all. The only words she spoke all day were when she asked Rachel Hennessy why she didn't have a father living in the house. Actually, what she said was, "You don't have a father, do you, Rachel?" in a fairly conversational tone. Rachel looked at her, horrified, and yelled, "I do too!" Harriet said briskly. "Oh, no, you don't."
"I do too!" Rachel shouted. "Well, he doesn't love you."
"He does too!"
Well, then why doesn't he live with you? And Rachel burst into tears.
The next day, she went to the park immediately after breakfast. She looked for a long time in the bushes and finally found a frog. It was a very small frog, maybe a baby. She picked him up very carefully so as not to squash him and put him in the pocket of her jumper. Then she ran to school, keeping her hand lightly around him so he couldn't jump out. She ran to her homeroom and lifted the top of Marion Hawthorne's desk. Then she carefully put the frog down inside. The frog hopped once and stared up at her peevishly. She stared back at him. She had grown rather fond of him. She hoped nothing happened to him in the confusion. She closed the desk softly so as not to frighten him, then sat down primly in her place. The children all came in. While they were standing up saying good morning, Harriet grabbed a chunk of Laura Peters' hair and chopped it off with some scissors she had ready. Laura Peters didn't feel a thing. She sat down quite happily, never suspecting that she had a large chunk cut out of her hair. Harriet stared at the spot with a kind of joy. Just as Sport, who had seen the whole thing, was about to rat, Marion Hawthorne opened her desk. Harriet had never seen such confusion or heard such screams in her life. It was extremely gratifying. It was as though the whole class erupted in a volcanic shower of cries, running, yelps, and tumbling bodies. No one at first knew what had happened. Marion screamed so loudly that everyone jumped up. Then, when they saw what appeared to be a small brown spot leaping from desk to desk, onto a child's shoulder, onto another desk, from there to an arm, they lost their heads completely without being able to tell what about. In the confusion, Harriet got up quietly and walked home. When she came in, the cook said in a very quiet voice, "What are you doing? You're not supposed to be home."
"I'm just home."
"But why are you home?" the cook said ever so softly. "Why are you whispering?" shouted Harriet.
"I have a new cake in the oven," whispered the cook. "It will be ready in a minute. You mustn't bounce around or walk heavy or shout, because it will fall."
Harriet stood there. She munched a thought over in her mind. Without warning, she ran to the center of the room, overturned a chair, then jumped up and down, stomping her feet with all her might. The cook screamed one long scream and flew to the oven.
"Look what you've done, you terrible child! That does it! I quit! If I have to put up with you one more day, I will go stark, raving, yelling crazy, and it's not worth it for what I get paid!"
Harriet left the room. The cook stood looking at the flat cake. It lay there in the pan as if someone had stepped on it.
"There is something wrong in this house. It was never this bad before. Mrs. Welsh is going to hear from me, all right, all right."
Harriet lay upstairs in her room all day. She didn't look out the window or read or write in her notebook. She just lay there looking at the ceiling. Through her mind rang one single name endlessly. "Old golly, old golly, old golly. Old golly," as though saying it would make her appear. In the late afternoon, she could hear the cook yelling at her mother.
"I'm quitting, I tell you. I'm tired of being run into every day and being screamed at, and now she's stomped my cake, and that does it."
"Oh, please don't leave us now. We need you," Harriet's mother was almost begging.
"I wouldn't stay for all the money in the world. I'm leaving right now."
"How about a $5 raise? I think we could see our way clear,"
Something better be done about that, Harriet. I hate to leave you in the lurch, but she run into me one more time, or pull a nasty trick like stomping my cake, and that's it.
I understand.
I'm a cook. I'm not a nurse.
Harriet, in her room, thought, "Oh, golly, oh, golly, oh, golly."
Of course, I understand completely.
Cook retired loudly to the kitchen, and Harriet's mother came up the steps. Harriet could hear her coming. She kept looking at the ceiling. There was a pattern there made by the leaves of a tree outside the window, a very interesting pattern which changed over and over.
"Harriet, what is the matter with you?"
Her mother stood in the doorway. Harriet didn't answer, and inside the song went, "Oh, golly, please, please, oh, golly."
"Harriet, do you know what my day has been like?
I had a frantic call at the hairdresser's to come to your school immediately. I went over there and heard how you had spent your morning. That Laura Peters is practically going to have her head shaved. Marion Hawthorne went home sick, and Miss Elson was on the verge of tears, she was so wrought up. She'll probably never get over it. She says it was bedlam for hours. Then I come home to find the cook quitting. Well, luckily I saved that situation, but Harriet, this has gone too far. Now you're going to have to sit up and talk to me. What do you think you're doing?"
Harriet didn't move. Inside, the song had stopped, and she felt a dim sense of pleasure, side by side with a swelling current of fear.
"Harriet?"
She lay there. Her mother turned and left the room, saying as she went, "Your father will be home in an hour. If you're not talking to me by then, you'll have to talk to him." Harriet lay there the rest of the afternoon, watching the leaf pattern change and fade. She heard her father come in.
"I just can't cope with this kind of thing. I come home from the office, and I want some peace and quiet and a martini. I come home tonight, and the ice bucket isn't even filled. You are practically raving. I can hear that fink of a cook all the way from the kitchen. She is yelling so loud. And you tell me you just gave her a $5 raise? Now make sense, woman!"
There was a lot of mumbling, and then a door closed. Her mother had taken her father into the library. Everyone always went into the library to be fussed at. She lay in the dark and stared at nothing. She didn't blame her father for being angry. It was all so boring. When she closed her eyes sometimes, she saw a yellow spot. She almost fell asleep. A slant of light fell across her face, and she opened one eye a crack to see her father standing in the doorway. She closed her eyes.
"Harriet, are you asleep?"
Harriet didn't move.
"Harriet, answer me."
Harriet just lay there, scarcely breathing.
"Listen, I know perfectly well you're not asleep. I used to do the same thing to my father, so you just sit up and talk to me."
Quickly, Harriet sat up, leaned over, and in one perfectly coordinated motion threw a shoe at her father.
"Well, of all the splutter, splutter, something has to be done. This child, come in here. I think we'd better call... What the..."
The door banged shut. Harriet lay there as though she had never moved, had never thrown a shoe, had never been unhappy, had never caught a frog. She thought quietly, "Wait until I break Janie's finger." Then she fell asleep quite suddenly. Late at night, she awoke to feel her mother putting her pajamas on her and tucking her in. She slept blissfully. Chapter 14. When Harriet got up the next morning, she was starving because she hadn't had any dinner the night before. She went downstairs in her pajamas and sat down at the breakfast table.
"Harriet, go back up and put on your clothes."
"No."
What do you mean, no? Her mother stared at her wide-eyed.
No, that's all, just no. Get up those steps this minute, her father said, or you'll get a wailing you'll never forget.
Harriet went back up and put on her clothes. She came back and sat down again. Neither of her parents had a paper in front of them, and they seemed to look at her a lot.
Did you wash?
No.
Then go back and wash.
No.
Harriet, you always go back and wash.
Silence.
Harriet, go up and wash.
No. Her father looked at her mother.
We are doing this none too soon, I see. But before we all get a lot of newfangled ideas, may I say, Harriet, that you are going to go upstairs right this minute and wash, or you won't be able to sit down for a week.
Harriet went back upstairs and washed. Somehow it all made her feel rather pleasant, and she hummed a little coming back down.
This morning, her mother said, you are not going to school.
I know it.
How do you know it? Harriet, were you spying?
No.
Then how did you know?
I decided I wasn't going. I don't like school anymore.
Oh, well, that's not exactly what I meant. I meant that this morning you are going with me to pay a visit to someone.
Harriet's heart leaped.
Old Golly? Is Old Golly in town?
Her mother and father exchanged a glance.
No, said her mother. We're going to see a doctor.
Oh, Harriet chewed some bacon.
Dr. Andrews?
She asked casually, planning to spread some rumor about Carrie when she was in the office.
No, said her mother, and looked rather helplessly at her father.
Her father went, humph, and cleared his throat a couple of times. Then he said, This is a rather pleasant chap you're going to see. He's not a fink like most doctors.
Harriet kept eating without looking at him. Maybe, she thought, I could just say my father thinks Dr. Andrews is a fink, and that would be enough for Carrie.
When she was finished, she went outside to wait for her mother. She looked in the direction of her school and could see all the children piling in the door. She didn't care if she ever went in there again. It seemed 100 years ago that she had liked to write Harriet M. Welsh at the top of the page.
Her mother finally came around in the car, and Harriet got in. Her mother drove over to 96th and 5th, then three times around the block looking for a parking place, and finally put the car in a garage, fuming in rage the whole time.
In the elevator, Harriet said suddenly, "What am I coming here for? I don't feel sick." Although she felt a little sick as she said it.
You just talk to this doctor. He doesn't do anything to you.
But I don't know him.
That's all right. He's a nice man.
But what do I talk about?
Anything he wants to.
They got to the 7th floor, and her mother buzzed the buzzer on a blue door. It was answered almost immediately by the funniest-looking man Harriet had ever seen. He had bright red hair that stood straight up behind a bald crown, an enormous mouth grinning with yellow teeth, funny glasses with big black rims, and he was very, very tall. So tall he bent over a little. He also, she noticed, had a very strange nose and very long feet.
"Hello there," he said cheerfully.
Harriet sneered at him. She hated people who tried to make you like them right away.
"Hello, Dr. Wagner. This is Harriet."
Harriet looked away. She felt stupid standing there. They were both looking at her.
"Well now, won't you come into my office and we'll have a little talk?"
The library all over again, thought Harriet. This is a long way to come to be fussed at.
Her mother smiled at her, then went into the waiting room while Harriet followed the red hair into its office.
The office was large, with a sky blue rug, a couch, and for some reason, a spinet. Harriet stood stock still in the middle of the room as Dr. Wagner sat down in one of the two huge armchairs. He looked at her pleasantly, rather expectantly, and she looked back. There was a great deal of silence. "Well?" said Harriet after a long time.
"Well, what?"
he said pleasantly.
"Well, what do we do now?"
"You can do anything you like."
"Can I leave?"
"Do you want to?"
"Well, what am I supposed to do?"
Harriet was getting quite angry. Dr. Wagner scratched his nose. "Well, let's see. We could play a game. Do you like games?" This was the dumbest thing Harriet had ever heard of. To come all this way to play a game? She bet her mother didn't know this. What was the matter with this man? She decided that the only nice thing to do would be to play along with him for a while.
"Yeah, I like games, all right."
"What kind of games?"
"Oh, what a tiresome man. Any old game. You're the one wanted to play a game."
"Do you play chess?"
"No." Old Golly was going to teach me, she thought, but she never got around to it.
"Well, how about Monopoly?"
Just about the most boring game in the world. It had everything in it that Harriet hated.
"Okay, if you want to." Dr. Wagner got up and went to a cabinet next to the door. When he opened it, Harriet could see all sorts of games, dolls, dollhouses, and trucks. She tried to be nice about it, but she was curious.
"Do you sit here all day playing with all those things?"
Wait till her mother got a load of this. He looked at her archly.
"What do you think?"
"What do you mean, what do I think?
Do you think I sit here all day playing with these toys?"
"How do I know? You got a whole closet full of them."
"Don't you have toys at home?"
This was too much. "Yes," she shouted, "but I'm 11.
"Oh." He looked somewhat taken aback, standing there with the Monopoly board in his hand. Harriet began to feel sorry for him.
"Well," she said, "shall we play one game?"
He looked relieved. He set up the board carefully on the coffee table. Then he went to the desk drawer and got out a notebook and a pen. Then he sat down across from her.
Harriet stared at the notebook. "What's that?"
"A notebook."
"I know that," she shouted. "I just take a few notes now and then.
You don't mind, do you?"
"Depends on what they are."
"What do you mean?"
"Are they mean, nasty notes, or just ordinary notes?"
"Why?"
"Well, I just thought I'd warn you. Nasty ones are pretty hard to get by with these days."
"Oh, I see what you mean. Thank you for the advice. No, they're quite ordinary notes."
"Nobody ever takes it away from you, I bet, do they?"
"What do you mean?"
"Nothing. Let's play."
They played a game. Harriet was wildly bored, but she won. Dr. Wagner took a quantity of notes during and after the game.
"I'll bet if you didn't take so many notes, you'd play better."
"Do you think so?"
Harriet looked at him darkly. He couldn't be this stupid. Why was he acting like this? They played another game. He took less notes and won that game.
"You see?" Harriet was jubilant. "Taking notes all the time makes you no good. Why don't you put that notebook away someplace?"
She watched him closely.
He looked faintly amused for the first time.
"Suppose," he said slowly, "I give you a notebook. Then we'll each have one and we'll be fairly matched."
Harriet stared at him hard. Was he kidding her? Was he trying to see what she'd do? Her fingers itched at the thought of a notebook, of a pen flying over the pages, of her thoughts finally free to move, flowing out. Oh, who cared what he was trying to do?
Okay, do you have another one? She tried to appear casual.
Yes, as a matter of fact, I do.
He went to his desk and took out a very pretty little notebook with a bright blue cover.
Harriet tried to look unconcerned by looking at the spinet.
He also took out a nice little ballpoint pen. He handed both to Harriet. She felt better the moment she had them in her hands.
Dr. Wagner sat down, and they began another game. Harriet began to write.
Funniest nose I have ever seen. Runs right down the middle of his face like a snake. He reminds me somewhat of Pinky Whitehead, but he's not as repulsive. He has red hair and funny teeth. They are sort of yellow and long. This office smells of cigars and chalk. I bet he plays with those toys after everyone leaves. Harriet had forgotten all about the game. She suddenly heard Dr. Wagner saying softly, "Harriet, Harriet, it's time to go." She didn't want to leave. "I can't," she thought, "live here." She got up quickly and started for the door. "Goodbye, Harriet," he said gently.
"Goodbye," she said.
He wasn't a bad sort, she thought, just a little batty.
Harriet's mother took the notebook away immediately. Harriet felt empty on the ride back. When she got home, her mother disappeared, and the long afternoon stretched ahead of her. Without a notebook, she couldn't spy. She couldn't take notes. She couldn't play town. She couldn't do anything. She was afraid to go and buy another one, and for once, she didn't feel like reading. She suddenly found herself wondering what would happen if she went to see Sport and Janie and tried, privately, to be friendly. After all, being her best friends, they had always known she was a spy and that she was going to be a writer, and so how could they suddenly act as though this were a terrible thing? Maybe they were tired of being mad anyway. She grabbed her coat and ran down the steps. She wondered on the way if they'd gotten Janie into dancing school. She could start with that to break the ice. The maid let Harriet in, and she went up the back steps straight to Janie's lab. She opened the door, and there stood Janie, so involved in her work that she didn't even look up. Harriet said softly, so as not to frighten her, "Janie?" Janie turned quickly and was so startled that she dropped the test tube she was holding. She stood there absolutely stricken at the sight of Harriet. Then she